I want to thank everyone for being with us tonight and reiterate what I said a bit ago before everyone was with us, is that I feel like tonight is really the kickoff of the Healing Story Alliance's great efforts towards this summer's national conference. And there has been a concerted effort by the board for the past several months to create a focus this summer on healing story and social justice, and how the two overlap, come together, and how we can grow that relationship between the two. So with that in mind, we've created quite an incredible program that is going to be in three parts. The first part involves offering a workshop to the community in Kansas City. And one of our members out there, Jamie Mayo, has been working very hard to visit several nonprofits in the area and invite members who they serve in the community, people whose lives have been touched or impacted by social inequity, to come and take part in a day-long workshop looking at what are our stories, how do we empower our voices to share our stories, really a lot of self-reflection, the story of us, the story of me, the story of us, and the story of where we want to go now, which is along the lines of Marshall Gann's work. And I'm going to have the privilege of facilitating that on Tuesday before the conference gets going. Our hope is that out of that, there will be some courageous members who will want to join us at the concert on Wednesday night to share some of the stories that emerged out of that workshop. In addition to that evening, we are so blessed to have professional storytellers Susan O'Halloran, Michael McCarty, Emily Lansing, Lily Pang, and myself to share our own stories that touch again on issues related to social justice and storytelling, whether they be the stories we tell or stories from our work, in some way representing the work that each of these fine tellers is doing in this area. On Thursday, in the pre-conference, all of these wonderful tellers will be with us again, in addition to hopefully many of the people who participated on Tuesday, as well as anyone who signs up to come to the pre-con, to engage in what I call story exchange, which is, as a larger group, exploring some of those same issues that were raised on Tuesday with the smaller group around who am I, how have these issues that relate to social justice, social inequities, impacted my life, how listening to stories of others that are similar and different, and working together in listening to our stories to talk about how we might all move forward together in a way that makes a difference. So that's the overall plan. Tonight, we have, as I mentioned, these four wonderful tellers who will be at the concert giving you an introduction about themselves and the story work that they're doing as it pertains to social justice, who they're working with, the kind of story work that they're doing, and the kind of stories they either tell or listen for. That's the first half. Everyone's going to get about 5 minutes to introduce themselves. And then we're going to open up for discussion amongst the larger listening audience, but with the panel as the focus, on how did you get into social justice story work. How has this work impacted you as a person? What's the impact you've seen on others? And where would you like to see social justice story work go or grow? So that's our next hour together, and we're so glad that you're with us. But our thought was to start with those members of our panel.
Could I just interject real quickly to remind the people that just got on to hit *6 so they could mute their call in the background, so there won't be any kind of background noise for the speaker. And then when you want to speak, you can just hit *6 again, and that will unmute your phone.
So I'm about to do the same, but would love to introduce first Emily Lansing. If you're comfortable, Emily, beginning with your own introduction, I'm going to actually be a merciless facilitator and set the timer for 5 minutes max, and we'll give you some warning when you're getting close. But share with us a little bit about your story work and who you work with and the kind of work you do and the kinds of stories you tell or listen for. So, Emily.
I am unmuted now. I'm talking. I'm also driving children home from soccer. So hopefully you won't have any trouble hearing me. And if you do, please let me know. I live in Chicago, and I have been telling and teaching storytelling and working with storytelling and community here for about 25 years. And currently, I both work as Associate Director of Community Arts Engagement at the Logan Center for the Arts at University of Chicago. And I also coach a team of young poets from around the city that uses the form of spoken word to tell stories about their own experience and the experience of growing up in Chicago. And I also am one of the founders of ASHE, the Chicago Association of Black Storytellers in Chicago, and for many years was the leader of the youth group, and now I work actively to support the development of young voices through that organization. And so I, as a performer, I also perform with Zara Baker in a duo called In the Spirit, and much of the work that we have developed together over the years focuses on African and African American folktales and history. And recently, in the last couple of years, we've started to focus on doing a lot of performance of stories of African women and their fight for social justice. And I also have worked to develop some performances with my husband, most recently sort of exploring personal story and my experience of raising four black boys in the urban environment and on the south side of Chicago. So that's a little bit about me and my work.
Thank you. Thank you. What a great beginning. And while multitasking, which says so much about who you are and what you do and how you pull this off. Lily, are you available still here to share with us your introduction?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. So I am having a little bit of trouble with the reception, so I can hear probably every 4 out of 6 out of 10 words. So hopefully this will come across okay to you guys over there. So my name is Lillian Rodriguez-Pang. I am a storyteller in Australia in the Sydney and southern regions of Australia. I have been working with stories for approximately 20-odd years. I began my work as a storyteller in the mental health field. I began really because mental health was touching issues, were touching members of my family, and the pathways through versions of sanity and the world when you're dealing with institutions and medicalization was quite a difficult path to be treading upon. And it led me towards storytelling. It led me to use stories as a form of communication, and at certain points along that pathway, storytelling really was the only way that I could communicate with my brother who was institutionalized. So that took me from using storytelling with my brother and my family and in the institution in a very informal way to studying more about it, learning. I ended up changing my career altogether. I was an economist. I threw that in and became a full-time storyteller when my brother passed away. So for 15 years, I've been a full-time storyteller. I then went on to work with storytelling amongst youth. I work with storytelling for resilience, the development of resilience and mindfulness amongst our youth, and also looking into identity formation. In Australia, we have very high rates of multiculturalism, and there is a passage of our youth development where they have to choose that identity, and it's quite a difficult one to formulate within the wider culture and system. So I've been working with storytelling and youth at risk and storytelling in high multicultural regions to assist people in incorporating the range of stories that they are and can be, and the identifying the ranges of choices that they can choose to walk upon in their storied identity and formation. So that's a little bit about what got me into storytelling and the work with storytelling. Currently, the main three programs that I'm working consistently at the moment is at a mental health recovery program. So I work there once a week doing storytelling and percussion. I also work with refugee families, so working with every age group from sort of newborn babies, under five, 10 to 15-year-olds, 20-year-olds, and parents or whoever it is that made it through here at this point in time. So I have a very mixed range in that group when I'm working with storytelling for refugee families. A lot of what I'm doing when I'm working with a refugee family is looking at sense of culture, holding on to stories, and looking at placing traumatic experience into the story world and also placing the positive experiences and finding a place for all of those stories to be held together. So looking at the balance of stories that we hold, particularly when we're reforming identity and at a turning point in our identity formation. The other work I do at the moment is I work for a theatre company in Wollongong, engaging with the Indigenous community here, so Aboriginal culture. I work towards events and story sharing. So two weeks ago, we had the culmination of a one-year program of recording Aboriginal stories amongst the elders, passing those through a consultative group, and then handing those stories down to youth so that the youth then perform them on stage. So again, it's that sharing of stories and cultural formation of identity and valuing the story as we present ourselves to others. So that's the current work that I do. I perform as well, but in terms of story work, it's the mental health, resilience, refugees, and Aboriginal culture that I do mainly at the moment.
Wow, beautiful. Again, I'm continually blown away here by the wealth of experience and work that's being done. So let's keep it going here. Michael, are you ready to jump in?
Yeah.
There he is.
When? Come on.
You're on.
Okay. Michael D. McCarty, Have Mouth, Will Run It. I live in Inglewood, California, Los Angeles area. From Chicago, I escaped. I've been telling stories as a full-time profession for about 25 years. Interestingly, I started my social justice storytelling when I was in high school at St. Ignatius in Chicago, when I discovered Black history and culture and shared stories of that and other aspects of the civil rights and Black power movement. I was a member of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. I just did my one-man show, The Happy Panther, in New York, and that was a lot of fun. Michael can testify to that. And I specialize in African, African-American history and culture and multicultural stories. I've worked with at-risk youth and a lot of that. But the thing that I've been doing for the past 2 years, I've been working in seven different prisons in California, teaching storytelling workshops to inmates as part of the Arts and Corrections Program. This is the resuscitation of a program that went on in the 90s here, and it was found that inmates who participated in Arts and Corrections were less likely to be involved in violence, and when they got out, they were more likely to get out. The thing that's been interesting here is how storytelling, because as far as I know, I'm the and here in California, I'm the only storyteller, as we talk of storytelling. There's another guy who calls himself a storyteller. I think he's a theater guy. I don't know much about him. But the impact that this storytelling workshop has had on inmates has been amazing. It's been mind-blowing. And I am the only of the art program that I know of where guys come in and say, so what the hell is this? Because they have no idea what storytelling is, or if they think they do, they're wrong. But once they find out, because I tell them that I am there to help them to find their stories and develop their stories, and once they start mining their stories, it's amazing the things that come out. Some of them tell funny stories. Some of them tell stories about their criminal activities. Many of them talk about how they got to prison and the impact it's had on their families. Some of them tell stories that, I mean, have had me in absolute tears. But the main thing is that they learn that they have stories, that their stories are important, and their stories are worthy to be told. And it's been the highlight of my storytelling career. And that's the end of that.
Beginning or the beginning. Michael, thank you. Beautiful. Susan. Susan O'Halloran.
Hello. Also a Chicago kid, theme running here. I also started in high school. I was part of a youth group, Young Christian Students. I grew up in an all-white neighborhood. Chicago still is one of the most segregated cities in Chicago. And lucky in high school, had some radical nuns who took me across what was called the color line. And I got to hear black and brown adults who were working in civil rights. They were working with Dr. King, and then they'd turn around and they'd work with us. So it really changed my life. So I was hearing certain stories on my side of the line, and then I'd cross and hear stories of a totally different kind. And so young person, I was just like, why haven't I heard these stories? It would make such a difference. So we started a youth group, Operation Bus, Better Understanding Between Students, and brought kids from all the different segregated parts of Chicago together to share our stories and to find out what we weren't being told and why we were being kept ignorant of one another. So I began telling social justice stories 50 years ago, and teamed up with Father Derek Simons, who at one festival came up to me and said, how do you get so much meaning in those stories? And he saw the potentials for building bridges between, quote-unquote, different races. And we started doing festivals, just 3 days festivals dedicated to social justice and all those things that happened where people go, I didn't know that, and or that's my life too. And the thing we did different was it wasn't just performance. We always say when we tell our stories, go tell your stories. Well, what we did in our festival is we left time for people to tell their stories. It wasn't just about the performers. The audience got to turn to people around them, tell their stories, or come up on stage and tell stories. Or sometimes we would have discussions about the topics that were brought up in the stories, and we would sometimes have other experts come in to talk about. So it was a combination of storytelling, speaking, discussion, question answer, fishbowl, where people got to kind of be flies on the wall and listen to people of different groups talk to each other, see what it is like when just all black or all brown or all white people are talking together. So it was very exciting. And then we eventually took that online, and we have videotaped at this point over 160 stories of folks telling stories about race, and it's called racebridgesstudios.com, racebridgesstudio.com. Love people to go and see that. Emily and Michael are two of the folks on the panel that are, we have their stories up there. And we put those online for 3-day festivals, the first online storytelling festival, and reached over 50 countries. 112,000 folks participated. And again, got to ask questions. The tellers would be on live after their videos played, and people could ask questions directly or talk about the issues. So you had Mississippi talking to Germany, talking to South Africa, talking to Australia. It was really exciting. And so from there, we've also done a lot of programs in the schools. We just recently did something where Emily Hooper Lanzanas' group that you just talked about, the Rebirth Ensemble Poetry, performed. We gave Race Bridges awards to high school students who are making a difference. And those kids talked, and they were amazing. But Emily's troupe came and performed. But we also had elders who were involved in the civil rights movement, the Japanese American redress movement, its Muslim activities, etc., talk to the kids about shared stories from their lives when they hung out with Dr. King and they played pool with him or whatever. And then we had little pins with flames on it, and those elders passed the flame on to the youth, saying, "You're the next generation to take care of social justice issues." Kids were very emotional, crying, what have you. But that's one project. The other is welcoming communities up here on the North Shore, telling neighbor stories, gathering immigrant stories, the Muslim neighbor next door. Sometimes we get people to tell their stories. Sometimes I tell the stories. It depends how comfortable people feel sharing their stories. The other project, we just finished indexing that 160-some videos. So at the conference, I will be teaching a workshop about relevant curriculum in the classroom and how to use these videos. So I just indexed them all by theme so they're easier for people to look up. We might know the storytellers' names, but a lot of teachers look at these 100-some storytellers and they go, "Where should I start?" So now everything will be indexed with themes, discussion question, resources. So I'm excited to have that project done. And just personally, I'm working on stories myself about the invention of whiteness, trying to show how this thing called races, which doesn't biologically exist, how it got invented and why it got invented, and how to put that into story form. And for the concert, depending upon, we have a lot of time, I'll talk about my experiences in high school being brought across the color line and how it blew my mind. Or if we have shorter time, I want to share some stories of things that happened here in Chicago after 9/11 to show how groups of all different faiths and no faiths, religious faiths, came together after 9/11, some of the positive stories that we don't hear. So that's an introduction.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. One of the things Susan raised that I forgot to mention in the beginning is that I believe all of our panelists are also leading workshops at the conferences. I believe that's correct, and I'm going to have, when we come back again, each of you talk about what your workshop is going to be. Susan, thank you for raising that for me. So for me, just to interject a little bit about my introduction, I'm Lanny Peterson, and I feel like a relative newcomer to the group compared to the 20, 25 years experience each of you talk about. I've been in the storytelling world just 15 years, and it was the beginning of turning my life around. My background prior to that was as a psychologist, a therapist, public speaker, and when I got introduced to the fact that there was not only a storytelling world but a healing story group, that's when I feel like I began to discover my passion and my interest. I got into social justice work. I would like to say that I was drawn to it. I was seeking it out, but in fact, I fell into it through the back door, and I was invited now about 12 years ago to volunteer for a social service agency here in the Boston area where I live and work to run a storytelling workshop for a group of recently released inmates who were trying to get their feet back on the ground and learn how to present themselves better in job interviews and housing interviews, and they felt that the ability to tell their story could be at the heart of that. That first group of seven men who we came to refer to them as the Magnificent Seven was my beginning entree of realizing how powerful this work could be in terms of changing lives, changing one's relationship to themselves, empowering one to move and walk in this world differently. And I never have looked back. That entree led me to do many more of those groups for both men and women who were exiting prison, and then to go, similar to Michael, into the prisons and try to bring these programs inside here in the Boston area. The work then grew, and fortunate through grants that came through an organization in Boston called City Mission that also valued this work and continued to find ways to support me to do it, brought me into contact with inner city youth, with young prostitutes, with people who are struggling with racial injustice, class inequities, social issues of all kinds. In the last 3 years, Boston in particular, and I think it's, again, across the nation, has struggled with huge growing numbers of homeless. And City Mission, who has been my champion and sponsor, has asked me to turn my attention there. And, again, that has been a blessing for me to get involved now with many people who are on the streets. I've been bringing this storytelling workshop both into day treatment shelters as well as overnight shelters. In fact, one of the institutions here in Boston called Rosie's Place, which is for women only and houses over 300 women, started a year and a half ago with a day-long storytelling workshop that they then turned into a three-session advocacy workshop, and more recently they said, you know, this is leadership. So they've developed a 10-session, or asked me to develop a 10-session leadership workshop with storytelling at its heart, and they now run it quarterly for homeless women in Boston. So I have been supremely blessed, challenged, and changed by this work. What led to the pre-con was a moment that I had about a year ago when I was inviting people whose lives have been impacted by homelessness to speak at a community event. And one of my participants said, I don't want to just stand up here and tell my story. I want to hear the stories of the people in the audience and who they are and why they're here and why they're interested in my story and how their lives might be different or similar. And I realized the power of what she was speaking, and out of that created something called Story Exchange, which is creating experiences where people come together out of all different kinds of backgrounds, very similar to some of the work that Susan mentioned and is working in, and share these stories across race, cross income levels, cross cultural backgrounds, cross jobs, cross all different experiences, to find the ways that we are both similar and different in a way that we can both gain insight into ourselves, into other, and to work together towards using that insight and knowledge towards creating change in the ways that we can mutually agree needs to happen moving forward. So Allison and Mike Selger, Elisa, and the board felt that that could be a wonderful experience to bring to the pre-con, but to engage the people of Kansas City in that as well. And that's what we're attempting to do, and to bring this incredibly experienced panel into that experience as well. So that's you've now been introduced to the four of us and five of us, who we are, where we're coming from, what we've done. And we've already begun to talk a little bit about our journeys into social justice work and what got us here, and a little bit about the impact that we've seen on others. I thought it might be good just to open it up at this point and see if there's any questions from listeners for any one of us, and where the conversation goes with an perhaps an underlying theme of what people's vision is for where social justice story work can go and grow, and the ways that we are both envisioning that and hopeful. So are there any audience questions for any one of us or for the whole group?
Lanny, I have a question.
Is this Allison?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And should we see if there's any questions for Emily or Lily first, since they have to get off any moment?
Great question. I hope they're even still here. So to check in first with Emily and Lily, if you're here, to come off mute, and maybe all the panelists can come off mute for a moment.
This is Emily, and I am still here.
Great. And Lily?
Lily, I'm still here. I can be here for another 10 minutes.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I think Allison's idea is great to open it up to anyone in the audience, particularly if they have questions for either Emily or Lily and the work that they're doing.
Hi, this is Mike Seliger, and my question is slightly more to Susan, but it's across the board, and it's the big elephant in the room these days. How do you see your work connecting to what's just happened in Orlando, and how would you use that?
Lily or Emily, do you want to say something to that? And I'll chime in.
Can I get that question?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear the question.
Sorry. Let me try again. The tragedy that's taken place in Orlando calls for all kinds of very specific healing needs at this point, and specifically probably how we go about teaching tolerance. And I wonder how you would fit that into your work.
Well, I'll speak, but Emily and Lily, please jump in if you want. I mean, that is our work. That is my work. I have a curriculum I created about teaching tolerance, kind of idea, even deeper than that, teaching activism. Once we're educated, because we're so ignorant about each other and what would be helpful, once that those foundational pieces, and then what does activism look like? How do you choose something that comes from your own love and passion and talent so you don't burn out? I also teach about taking care of yourself while you're active. And then we have a show, More Like Than Not, Stories of Three Americans, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, that we hope to do a whole lot more. So we model people of different faith groups actually listening to each other, seeing all that we have in common, as well as all the ways that we're different. I've done less with LGBT issues just because we thought there's so many diverse issues, you can only do so much. So our center has, our Center for Race Bridges Studio has been on issues of, I always want to put in quotes, race and religion to some degree, since that is thought racially and politically, economically, many of the same ways. So just to continue bringing people together, this divisive atmosphere, everybody here has talked about the power, and people are listened to, how it makes everybody feel worthy, and people who feel worthy and have some self-esteem don't tend to hurt other people so much. When you're in your creative spirit, you're the most magnanimous person in the room, right? So listening to each other, hearing each other, but then real specific curriculum and training. I do lots of training of teachers. How do you teach what you never taught? Many of the, especially the teachers who are identified as white, they were hugely miseducated, and they're still the majority in many places I go. It's white teachers with incredibly diverse classrooms. So, you know, all that foundation. I'm doing lots of work with police officers right now as well. I want people who hold guns to know they have biases and to know how to manage them. So on every level, this is our work to do what we can to stop the violent atmosphere and to learn how to listen to each other and respect one another. We could just go on and on. I want other people to be able to talk.
Thanks.
I think for me, it's the listening. Whenever I begin a storytelling workshop or any form of story work, I begin with the qualities and power of listening and opportunities to listen and how we can find that within our everyday. Obviously, being from Australia, I don't have the same environment that you're working within. We do have a range of situations where we look at events, at being outside of your country, of looking at events that are going on there and using them as learning opportunities, because there's some really crazy stuff that we hear about. over here in Australia, that has led to opportunities where, you know, within our own community, there was a whole range of protests and discussions going on about certain schools allowing talks about same-sex marriage, talks about same-sex families and things like that, where it, recently, as in response to that, last night, one of those talks were cancelled and became a candlelight vigil. So we are looking at opportunities where we are looking to examples of where love can come in, love and listening, rather than any other thing that seems to be the example on the mass media. And Australia is not doing a great job with this, particularly in the face of our refugees and all sorts of issues. But it offers an opportunity to look at what the opposite of love is, love and listening in our everyday. So that's the way for us here that's been something in terms of our response.
Beautiful.
Thanks. And you were heard perfectly, by the way, all through your talk.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if either Michael or Emily would like to respond at all, if anything has come up for them in listening to these responses.
I would say that I navigate as a storyteller in a lot of different spaces as a performer and as a teacher, and I probably am able to most directly address these questions in my work as a teacher in terms of trying to create space where young people feel safe to be fully who they are and to tell their stories. And to recognize that in the same way that we as storytellers have a lot of different approaches to storytelling, that with young people there are a lot of different platforms that are needed in order for them to be able to tell their story. And I know that, for example, one of the poems that I want to specifically just address the issue of LGBTQ and trans space, but also of sort of racial discrimination, that we've tried to create space where young people feel that, first of all, that they have a team, that they're not alone, and I think that is important, that I think it's very difficult, especially for youth to come forward and tell their stories and feel that they are speaking in isolation. So I think the extent to which we can help people to feel that they are a part of a community is extremely important. So I think community building has been an important part of my work, but also to feel that when we tell a story that everyone has a stake in that story, whether or not the experience that is happening in the story is your own, that it matters to create space for those stories to be told, whether or not that story is mine. I have a stake in allowing that story to come forward.
Michael D. here. Several years ago when we had our L.A. Storytelling Festival, and there's still another festival that goes on that still does this, is we would seek out folks from the LGBT community to tell stories, to share their own stories and to share. And what they told was up to them, whether they wanted to deal with issues or they just wanted to talk. A part of it is just being who they are and telling their story. And a lot of prejudice is based on ignorance and the lack of true exposure to people. You know, you deal with stereotypes because you're against something that somebody's told you to be against. You don't know people from that world. And it's the thing that we have had to deal with as black folks. You meet people who, they don't know any black people. All they know about black people is what they see in the news, what they see in the newspapers. Once people start to hear people's stories, and so the idea is to seek out people and put them in a position so that they can tell their story They can tell who they are. They can show who they are. And people can get beyond the stereotypes.
Excellent.
This is Lanny. Reflecting on what each of you have said, the power of exposure, of bringing it out, of creating safe space, when I do create a storytelling experience of bringing tellers who have been through my workshops out into the community, I spend time at the beginning educating the listeners about what it means to listen and the responsibility that is inherent in that. And one of the first pieces of that responsibility is to be aware of your own filters as you are listening and what is rising for you in that, and to explore as you're listening whether the stories that are coming up for you in response to the stories you are hearing, how that is giving you insight into who you are. So that's the first part, is to own your own filters. And the second part is to know that those who have spoken have made themselves vulnerable, and how can you as a listener give something back to those and meet them, if not midway, at least partway. So I always encourage, after each teller has spoken, affirmations from the audience about owning one way that they have a new thought or a new feeling or an inspiration to do something different because of what they've heard, so that they're becoming aware and speaking to their thoughts, their feelings, and any actions that might have been inspired from the story. And I find that that increases the safe space, but also gives something back to the tellers to know that their story has made a difference in someone else's life by expanding their knowledge, their experience. Anything else around this question, or are there any other questions from the audience for this this band of tellers here?
Well, let me say that before I forget, yes, I'm giving a workshop.
Thank right. you. Yes, Michael, great. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's called Storytelling Goes to Prison, and it's a workshop about the work I've been doing and the Arts and Corrections Program here in California and the place for storytelling in prison. And this is a growing concern. Here in California, it's been a pilot program for the last 2 years. Now it's going to go into all the prisons in California, and I'm trying to find more storytellers to get involved, because storytelling takes a special place here that's very, very unique. Obviously, it's different from theater and all the music stuff. And storytelling, when I start the next round, not only will I be working with the Arts and Corrections, I'll also be working in a program called Transitions for guys who are about to get out of prison, because they need to be able to go on job interviews, they have to reconnect with their families, and storytelling is an important part of that. And I may also be working in the mental health division with inmates who have been in solitary confinement for an extended period of time, and helping them to reconnect with the rest of the world via their stories. So we're talking applied storytelling to the nth degree. So my workshop will be about the opportunities that are opening up not only in California but around the country, how to get ready for it, sharing my techniques for doing it, and telling stories about some of the great success that I've had in this program that has been knocking socks off.
Wonderful. Emily or Lily, are you still here and to tell about workshops that you might be leading at the conference?
This is Emily, and I will be giving a keynote and leading a workshop with my son, who is a storyteller and a poet, and I'll be addressing issues of social justice in storytelling, and in the workshop, we'll be talking about some of the techniques that we have used as his storytelling has developed and as we work with other youth here in Chicago.
Wonderful. Wonderful. It's so exciting. And Lily, are you still here? I believe we might have lost Lily. Any other questions from the audience?
One comment. This is Mike Zilliger again. When Michael did his wonderful workshop about the Panthers in New York, one of the remarkable things that he did, and I wish he could talk about it for a minute, is how he uses book giveaway as a way of keeping everybody fully engaged.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah, and I'll be doing it in my workshop. One of the I gave away about 18, 20 books as part of my workshop, and buttons and stickers and what have you. And I when folks came in the door, they got a little raffle ticket kind of thing. And a young lady, I was standing by the door when a young lady said, "Yes, and at the end he'll be giving away books." I said, "No, giving away books is a part of the show." And during my show, I would stop, I would raffle off a book, and I would tell a story that came from that book, because the books are there for a reason. And it became an integral part of the program, and it was amazing to see people. You know, people like to get stuff, and people were lighting up about when they got a book, and if they didn't get a book, and people were calling out their numbers like I was going to magically just give them the book because of the numbers. But there was this whole dynamic that established because of my giving away these books. And there was one woman who didn't get a book. The woman sitting behind her got a book, and the woman sitting behind gave her the book because she said, she might have lived in Australia, but she lived somewhere away, and she said, "This is more relevant to you," and she gave her that book. And Robin Beatty was there, and she got a button, and I have a picture of her holding like that button, like it's manna from heaven. And so the whole book thing became a great part of the program, and I had people email me afterwards wanting to know what were the books, so they wanted to go and look them up, and they could find out more. So it was a great part of the show.
Michael, while you're on a roll here, do you want to give some insight into what you'll be telling at the concert?
That's a good question. Yes, I do want to give insight into it, and I will likely be telling an excerpt from my Happy Panther piece. I will be doing something about COINTELPRO, Fred Hampton, and the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, and how those things affected the course of my life.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wow. And Emily, do you have a plan for the concert, and or might your son be involved?
As I understand it, I'm not sure if my son will be part of the evening concert. We will be working together in the morning, and I'm still going back and forth about what I will be telling in at the concert. I'm considering the story of Lema Bowie, who's one of the African women to win the Nobel Peace Prize, as well as some of my own personal stories from the reality of motherhood on the south side of Chicago in this particular moment of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's going to be a powerful, powerful night. Very exciting.
And Lenny, if I could put in... I just want to say one thing about the workshop. I won't just be talking about the videos on Race Bridges, but also how if people come who are teachers or just us artists working in classrooms, how we don't have to know everything about different cultures, but having the students tell family stories, personal stories, and also my lead ways of getting socioeconomic, historical stories into the classroom, that teachers don't have to know everything. They just have to listen and bring their students forth. And so we'll be talking a lot about how to find that sweet spot where the curriculum teachers have to teach, that's standard stuff, core curriculum, how you can interweave family, personal, and the larger society and bring it into your classroom so the kids feel like they see themselves there. I'm always teaching about that kids need mirrors. They've got to see themselves. And they need windows. They got to look out and be able to see other folks. So I'll be giving a lot of techniques on how to do that. And I just wanted to say, if I can, one more thing. We're all doing this great work, and I just want to say it doesn't mean we know everything either. We're learning all the time about how to talk to each other. We were all miseducated. We were all brought up in segregated United States. And when we've tried to do multicultural shows, whether it's Black, White, and Brown, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, the different shows, we've had to spend time making it safe for us and having communication guidelines. Or I remember one time we got together, we were over a weekend with Robert Kikuchi and Goho, Nancy Wong, Dovey Thompson, LaRon Williams, Antonio Zachary, you know, just sharing stories with each other. And there are a lot of tears shed and knocks on my door in the bedroom saying, I don't think I can do this. It's too painful to talk about. And I just wanted to say something about, as interested as all of us are, and this is part of our life work and mission and vision, that there's a lot of just listening to each other and not assuming we know, and being gentle and good with each other, and trying to learn communication techniques we never got taught. So I just wanted to say something about that, that we're not coming in any way as experts. We're learners and journeyers as much as anybody else.
I'm so glad that you brought that in at this point, because even here as the facilitator, I'm feeling in awe of the work that each of you has done, and even somewhat intimidated by it. But as you speak, it's about process more than being content experts, being willing to be vulnerable, to own our stuff, to be present for others in this journey, in this process. And that's where the change can begin.
Yeah, and finding ways to, you know, be truthful and let each other know when we step on each other's toes. There's no way you can know everything about every single culture. And, you know, when I do something insensitive, I appreciate people who've educated me, because I got so miseducated, and how we do that without falling into shame. And, you know, it's just something we can really learn. And yet also, like I say, it's not like mamby-pamby with each other either. It's like sometimes people have to say, hey, white girl, wake up, you know, and that's a really good thing. So I just wanted to put that out, and I hope in all of our workshops, in our concert, that people will feel that openness, that we don't want to get hierarchical about social justice work.
As we come to the end of our time here, I hope that we have gotten people excited, have opened the door for how the many ways I hope that this work can continue to grow as we share what we've done, learn from each other, and continue to create a vision for how to just grow this. So I thank everyone for joining us tonight. I hope many of you can join us again in July, and my commitment is to capture as much of it as possible and to keep spreading the word.
Thanks for organizing.
Any last comments? Any last thoughts or comments before we say goodnight?
Just thank you so much. I didn't have any questions, but I just feel so full and so inspired and so grateful.
Yay.
Yeah, thanks for organizing this.
You've done good. By the way, I'm a Virgo. I do know everything.
Oh, yeah. I meant except you, Michael.
Thank you very much. Good night, everyone. Looking
forward to
night.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night. Good night, all.
Bye-bye. Good night. Thank you.